Good morning and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. For over 60 years, East Central Illinois' daily gathering spot for conversation, dialogue, and ideas. You can join in on the phone, online, or via a text. Our phone number is 217-356-9397. Email talk at WDWS.com. Or text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. Now, here's Brian Barnhart.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts, News Talk 1400 DWS on this Friday, the 20th day of April of the year 2018. Glad you're with us. Great to have you wherever you might be listening today, whether it's in your car, your home, around the world on the internet. Live streaming. We have it all for you here on Penny for Your Thoughts. And again, glad you're along on this Friday. We've had a very busy week. Ebertfest has been going on, of course. We've talked a little bit about preparations for the Illinois Marathon, which comes up in a week with all the activities next weekend. And today we're going to have a really fun show. We have some great guests for you in the first hour. We're going to talk about the weather, and you know when I filled in for Jim over the years, I would occasionally have meteorologist Greg Solier with us. He does our weather here both on this station, WDWS, our sister station, Light Rock 97.5, articles in the News Gazette. He's been doing this for many, many years and always gets a lot of good information out there for farmers and for everybody in regards to the weather. So we'll talk to Greg, also joined, and I think this is the first time they've ever done a show together. Dr. Jim Angel from the State Water Survey, Illinois State Water Survey. He's been with them since 1984. He's been the state climatologist since 1997. So we will have those two gentlemen together and talk weather here in this first hour. So if you have weather questions, numbers, prognostications, we'll look ahead to the summer. We'll try to figure out what in the world's happened here in the last few weeks with the weather. Got a nice day today, some sunshine and 42 currently, headed for a high of 60. Normal high is 65, so much better weather today. And how soon can farmers get in the fields? How soon can we get in the gardens? All of that with our weather experts, Dr. Jim Angel and meteorologist Greg Solier, coming up in the first hour. Then the second hour, and we tried to coordinate. It was tricky getting everybody different dates, when they would be in town, when they could be in studio, when we could be together. As it turned out, everybody was able to do the same day. Max Armstrong, one of the most recognizable voices in agriculture, radio broadcasting, farm, agribusiness across the country. He's broadcast from around the world, locales, one of the best-known names. He and Orrin Samuelson did shows together for years. Max Armstrong, our guest in hour number two. Tell you more about his experience, of course, and his background over the years, 30 years plus at WGN up in Chicago. So we'll have a packed show for you today. We're at 9:08. Want to remind you that voting continues. News Talk 1400 and News Gazette Media is the people's choice, the best of East Central Illinois. WDWS.com, and cast your votes in a variety of categories, including food, dining, nightlife, kids, pets, and more. The people's choice, brought to you in part by Express Employment. And I want to tell you, too, if you're going house hunting this weekend, I want to find out how much you might be eligible for when it comes to getting pre-approved, because sometimes you don't know. You don't know how big of a house can you get, how much can I afford on my mortgage. Steve and Pam Starwalt can help you with that. They know Damian Spencer. They've worked together for over 10 years. Damian's been in the mortgage business, lending business, for over 20. He's based at Fisher National Bank at 1710 South Neal. And so today being Friday, maybe you're going to go to some open houses tomorrow or Sunday. Damian at Fisher National Bank can get you the information right away today, so you'll have the information you need when going looking at homes. Whether you're downsizing, maybe you're upsizing, maybe your family's bigger, and you need to find out what you can afford as far as the home and the size and the amount. Certainly, Damian at Fisher National Bank can help with that. So the number to call, 239-7156. And better yet, you can Google Starwalt. They'll get you lined up with Damian at Fisher National Bank and get you all ready to go. And again, they can get all that information today, get that to you and get you ready for the weekend. Damian Spencer, Fisher National Bank, 1710 South Neal in Champaign. They also have locations elsewhere as well, but that's the main branch there, 1710 South Neal. They also have locations in Mahomet and Fisher. And we'll come back with more Penny for Your Thoughts. A lot to get to today, both with the weather and, of course, with farm broadcasting and agriculture in general with Max Armstrong, hour number two. Our opening break is next, though. All right, we're back. Penny for your thoughts, News Talk 1400. Here are the phone numbers, 356-9397. You can join us that way. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357, and you can email us, talk@wdws.com. We're honored and pleased today to be joined by Greg Solier, our meteorologist.
Hello again.
Good morning to you.
Good morning again.
And we've got Dr. Jim Angel from the Illinois State Water Survey, state climatologist. Good to have you here.
Good morning.
And you two have met before, but you've never done a program together.
That's right. I mean, we've talked constantly by email and Twitter.
And Twitter,
all that
and
stuff,
met a couple of times at National Weather Service functions, but face-to-face in studio on a broadcast outlet. Look out.
Who knows what's going to happen here. But, well, you brought great weather today, finally.
Who takes credit for this, by the way? You were right.
Yeah, well, if you get blamed for the bad weather, I'll take credit for the good weather.
All right. Well, there's our first agreement of the morning here. But, it's gorgeous out there for a change.
It really has. And I know farmers are getting itchy to get out there and get started.
I didn't see anyone obviously driving down here at 4 or 5 in the morning, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't be out there as your soil type and moisture levels and all that dictate. Watch the usual compression and compaction issues, et cetera. But you ought to be doing something here the next 7 to 10 days. Don't wait for me anymore.
Well, the weather is always on people's minds, as we know. I mean, that's you live with it every day. But this has been really strange, this whole spring. Wet, cold, just never warmed up.
And Dr. Angel could probably put that into perspective numbers-wise, I would think, right? He had a nice tweet over the past 24 hours about the number of stations that are reporting this record-type cold for April, correct?
That's right, yes. We have many places pretty much around the whole Midwest, so it's not just Illinois that's getting this, but all the upper Midwest has been very cold. And here in Champaign-Urbana, we're running about 10 to 11 degrees below normal for the month of April. And so if it keeps this up, it would be one of the coldest on record. We're probably going to moderate towards the end, so it won't be quite so bad. But, today it feels pretty nice. This is actually probably the closest to normal we're going to get so far. Our average high is about 65, average low about 44. So this is about what we should be experiencing in April at this point.
Mm-hmm. And probably because of the type of cold, which has been more or less like a mid to late winter cold, this will feel like, mid-June around here. Yeah, the normals are 65 and 43, high and low respectively. And so this is just finally, for a change, more typical mid-spring weather around here.
Yeah. You've talked a lot, Greg, when we've had you on about jet streams or flows. I mean, what happened? What caused all of this in general?
Obviously everyone knows that the jet stream, the steering currents, drive, if you want to talk in terms of general meteorology, the weather systems and air masses. And, there are, I think, other subtle, at least maybe to the in sense of general meteorology, other subtle nuances that are apparent there. But for folks who really forecast the weather and climatology as well, you take a look at, stratospheric temperatures. You look at indices off the Pacific Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean as well, not to mention we're still in some sense of a La Nina around here, obviously. Right. So you put all elements, some weighted more than others, plus that really deviating the overall steering currents, and it's just persistence at it. Mm-hmm. And here you are in the midst of still a almost February to March setup in the mid-stretch of April.
And you see all the years, Dr. Angel, where does this year stack with just the lateness, the coldness, the wet?
Yeah, if you look at snowfall-wise, like here in Champaign-Urbana, it's one of the snowiest Aprils on record. And then temperature-wise, again, one of the coldest on record. What's interesting is if we'd had this conversation in February, you'd say, well, this is just kind of a rather dull winter. We really had not had much snow, and the temperatures were within the normal range. And it really wasn't until March that we started to get more snow. And, in fact, so far we've got 4.9 inches of snow in April, and that's the second snowiest month of this winter. So that's kind of a mind-blowing fact right there. And so we're actually going to end up being close to normal on snowfall. Yeah, but we'll definitely be below average on temperatures for this winter season.
As Dr. Angel pointed out, not only is it here in Champaign-Urbana, but if you take a look at like Green Bay, Wisconsin, I think is going to set a record for snowfall in the month of April, and parts of Iowa and Minnesota. So it's not just here; it's over a wide area of the Midwest and the Corn Belt.
All right, 356-9397 is the phone number. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line 351-5357 if you have a weather question. Weather-related question, you're not going to get two better guys than right here. I mean, they know everything. You know, Greg and Dr. Angel.
Not quite at my end, but thank you.
So you're not going to find more weather knowledge than you're going to get in this room, and I don't contribute any of it. So that's the where we're now. Let's go to the phones. We've got Alan with us this morning, and Alan, go ahead.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
Sit down and umpire. It's been pretty miserable time to umpire. I've only had one day where I didn't use my jacket. I guess what I want to know is what temperature, mainly the temperature. I'm also working on a farm, but also want to know what the temperature is going to be in May, June, and July, because I did a lot of umpiring during then, and I do not like 90-plus degree temperatures, and I was wondering how many of them you think we might have.
Well, there you go.
That sounds like a question for me, I guess.
Yeah.
On this one here, yeah. I think the folks of the National Weather Service, at least at first, have put out their 90-day outlook. I believe that came out yesterday. I mean, there's no mm-hmm. endorsement on my end, but they were at least suggesting a somewhat, I believe, warmer than average, on the cusp of a warmer than average remainder of spring and summertime around here, and I'm probably a little more aggressive on the warmth aspect on my end. My estimation in the longer range fork into the mid to late portions of summertime, and I think I believe the folks as well, the National Weather Service, were thinking more of a wetter scenario, I believe, in that 90-day outlook.
That's right.
Yeah, and I think that wet weather issue will be maybe more continuing on really into the front end of springtime, and I'm in line, and I think I'm outlier than everybody else out there, that we may have more dryness issues down the line as we get deeper into summer. So it could be a really substantial swing of the pendulum from too wet, too cold, to at least seasonal heat to maybe a little hotter than we'd like it to be, and then some increasing dryness concerns as we get deeper into the summer season. So I know of a couple other guys that are kind of thinking along those lines. I don't think as a whole most everyone is in that particular category, but it may be nothing resembling normal or average, I would think, Dr. Angel, whatever that may be, versus one extreme to another around here.
That's right.
I've got a star question, too.
You've got a what?
Star question? Star. Maybe one of you guys can answer.
Ooh.
Okay.
maybe Brian answers that.
Yeah.
Okay. Friend of mine was talking about this the other day. I'm in my 60s now, and I don't remember this, but it seems like the star Venus is much brighter than it ever used to be. And I was wondering why that is. And it also seems like it's brighter towards the horizon than it is at the top of the sky. And I was wondering if it's because it's getting closer, or is there less gases in the air, or what?
All right, there's an astronomy question.
That's right. That's one for Dave Leake, I think, when he comes back here.
You've stumped the panel.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure whether you guys were acquainted with that or not.
All right. Hey, thanks, Alan.
Yep.
There you go.
Thank you.
We stumped the panel on that one. 356-9397 is how you can join us. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 3515-357, or email us at talk@wdws.com. We'll come back with our meteorologist Greg Solier, Dr. Jim Angel from the Water Survey, here together for the first time in studio. We'll take your weather questions, weather-related, planetary questions we probably can't answer, as you just saw. But we'll come back with more after this. All right, we're back. Penny for your thoughts. News Talk 1400 DWS. We're here with Dr. Jim Angel, state climatologist. We're here with Mr. Greg Solier, our staff meteorologist. You hear him every morning on this station. Glad to have them along here. It's pretty timely. The weather's looked very nice today, closer to normal than we've been. And, of course, it's been a cold, wet, and snowy spring so far. We'll have Max Armstrong join us in hour number two. All right, let's go to Eric. Hey, Eric, good morning. How are you?
Great. Good morning, all guys. I had a question. Jim, Tom Skilling, I frequently have followed him over the years, being a WGN watcher, although they don't show it here locally anymore. He references you all the time on his show. Do you have a working relationship with Mr. Skilling?
Yes, I do. In fact, I think it was probably within a matter of weeks of becoming state climatologist some 20 years ago, I got a phone call from Tom. So Tom was very interested in the work that I do, and so we've been, you know, we're actually friends. So, you know, it's a good working relationship, and we've had a lot of fun over the years, and we both like weather stats and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's been a great relationship.
Yeah, I noticed that. That seems to be a pretty constant on there. And present for Greg. Greg, you do the weather here in Champaign over the air all the time, but you're not a local guy, are you? You don't reside locally?
The office is a couple of hours north in the suburban Chicagoland area, but that's not unusual for private forecasters, private weather operations. We still have a keen eye on what goes on, not only here, but virtually anywhere. Satellite imagery, surface data, computer models, what have you. So we may not be physically in one particular spot, but certainly have a good eye, if you will, to weather wherever we may be. But just a couple of hours north. Closer to our kind of headquarters of This Week in Agribusiness. Can't really split the weather guy up into too many pieces. Some people would like to do that, but we tape This Week in Agribusiness in West Suburban Chicago, so it's really finding kind of a median to various clients that I tend to work with. So officially, physically not here in Champaign, certainly here in spirit, and certainly, of course, on the radio as well.
And you do the weather in a couple other places too, right?
Yeah, not far east of here, and over a 300-station network for the brownfield people, where that's a little more generalized. A lot of folks in agribusiness are really, they're just as interested in what's going on in Missouri or Kansas or Indiana or Ohio, let alone here in Illinois. So those type of forecasts and broadcasts are far more reaching, but they still tell a story of agribusiness and weather trends that will impact whatever industry it may be playing out.
Okay, Eric?
One more question?
Yeah, go ahead.
If I may, I had heard, and I'm not sure if this is accurate, but the fact that we have all these cornfields around here and that the corn actually sweats in the summer, adding to the humidity, is that accurate?
Yes, I've heard that. Dr. Angel can elaborate on that.
Yeah, well, there's been a couple of studies that have looked at that, and it's indeed true. As part of the process of growing and producing yields, corn plants and soybean plants will actually transpire moisture back into the atmosphere, and they're very good at that. They have very deep roots, and when you got a 9-foot tall corn plant, you got about 9-foot deep roots, and that's pulling up a lot of water out of the ground and into the atmosphere. So we're seeing spikes in humidity, especially in the July and August time frame, that we may not have seen 20 or 30 years ago. So it certainly has a short term but very sensible or very physical response to how we're growing corn and soybeans these days. So
we actually keep an eye from an operational standpoint on the dew points, and those are sometimes a rough measure of nighttime lows from a forecasting standpoint. And you can see pockets into parts of the corn belt where it may generally be a kind of a drier type air mass, with the exception of later into the year, you get areas where the humidity is higher, the dew points are higher, and those nighttime lows are higher as well. So there is, as you pointed out, direct impact there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the corn sweats with us.
Thank you guys.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
All right, thank you, Eric. Appreciate the phone call. Back to the phones again. Richard on with our weather experts today. Hey, Richard.
Good morning, Brian. And I have a question maybe Greg can, make an attempt at explaining. He may say, like Alan's call, well, that's an astronomy question, but I have known for decades that the light that we receive from the sun is basically parallel. It's 93 million miles away, and I think the sun's about 800,000 miles in diameter, but essentially the light is parallel. When we have clouds in the sky, low, say 30 degrees above the horizon, and the sun is behind it, explain the phenomenon where we see light rays shooting through holes in the clouds, and it's as though the sun is right behind the cloud. How can that phenomenon exist?
I would think that's probably dependent on the type of cloud, whether it's a little more what moisture consistency, if more of typical cumulus or stratocumulus type clouds, a little more vapor oriented versus an ice crystal cloud, cirrus in mind. If you think of maybe moisture droplets, ice particles, water droplets as sort of a prism, and you put that ray of light through it, some splitting of it will obviously, I would think, fracture that light. I would think a good way to describe it. Different elements of color associated with it as well, depending on the...
That's the prism effect.
Right,
I'm
exactly.
Talking about, it looks as though there's no breakdown in the structure of the light into the various colors. It's that as though the rays are emanating from a light source right behind the cloud, and I'm going, wait a second, those light rays should be parallel coming from the sun. I asked a science teacher, a high school science teacher, several years ago, and he said, yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't know the explanation.
Yeah, there's kind of a bending of the light properties,
yeah,
right?
There's actually something called corpuscular rays, and I think that's what you're describing. So it's actually an optical illusion where if you look at certain situations where the sun is passing through the clouds and it looks like it's all spread out, but it's really just based on your perspective. So I've heard of this before and had some discussions about it, and it's one of these things that looks like it's bending of the light or the light source is a lot closer behind the cloud, but it's just an optical illusion from your perspective. It looks The rays are actually parallel. It's just not.
Well, you gave me a term, corpuscular.
Yeah, that's right. So Google that one. And
I'll Google it. I'm enlightened further. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
Great to hear from you. We will have our news headlines here with Michael Kaiser. We're back with Greg Solier, Dr. Jim Angel. Any weather-related questions you have, feel free to give us a call. I don't know if you guys expected those questions today, but you never know what you're going to get. So
no, this is tough.
Yeah, well, it's like taking a tough exam here.
No kidding.
But we'll come back with more with our weather guest. Max Armstrong is in hour number two. We got a packed Penny today. Doug Quick joins us on Monday. He's got a new book out, Pictures on the Prairie. We'll talk about that on Monday. And more to come along the way on Penny for Your Thoughts. Here's the news.
A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart continues on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397. Email talk at WDWS.com or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line 217-351-5357.
Penny for Your Thoughts continues here. I want to remind you about Corey Swanson, Swanton Roofing, the roofing dog. He's a hands-on owner. He works on almost every job with the crew. It's truly a family-owned business, 100% owned and operated by Corey Swanson, his wife Melissa. He's a graduate, Corey is, from Rantoul High School and the University of Illinois, so you don't get more local than that. And they're comprised, the roofing dog crew is, of roofing professionals certified in roof installation. They receive all the employees' due full benefits and 401ks. So the point is they're incentivized to do a great job because they like their job and they want to do it well for you. And they guarantee, Swanson Roofing does, the workmanship for the lifetime of your roof. The materials they use are guaranteed for 50 years. And they also want you to know that they'll help you, Swanson Roofing will, with small repairs and save your roof. Even if Swanson Roofing did not do your roof, they're happy to come out and fix any problem. Swanson Roofing, the roofing dog, providing service in Champaign, Vermilion, Ford, and McLean counties. Get a free estimate, 217-355-ROOF, 7663, or visit Swanson Roofing online, theroofingdog.com. Brian Barnhart here. We're here on the phone lines at 356-9397. You can email us, talk at WDWS.com, or text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. Our weather experts are here, and you can join us. We've got Greg Solier, of course, our meteorologist. You're here every day on these airwaves, and Dr. Jim Angel, state climatologist, and over at the Illinois State Water Survey. Have a text here from CJ, says, excluding the 11-year solar cycle, here's the sun again, we're entering a much longer cycle with minimal sunspots. Do you anticipate a general cool-down worldwide? How's that for a...
Okay, another astronomy-related question.
There you go.
There, yeah. Yeah, there's the 11-year sunspot cycle, and there's... I've seen reports that they talk about variations in solar activity. We know in the past that it has been a big influence on us. It's actually surprisingly minimal on terms of the big picture thing. So I've seen talk that it has bottomed out and the amount of activity, but I don't think it's having really much of an effect on our actual climate. Mm-hmm. That's not really a big player at that point. It's okay. A pretty small impact.
There are some elements in longer range forecasting with sun flare activity, sunspot activity, in at least from my perspective, our perspective, putting the longer range together. But again, cyclical, and it's not a big percentage that goes into that forecast scheme of things. There may be some you know, electrical local nuances or maybe an adjustment here or there. But as a whole, I don't, at least from an operational standpoint, there's no big, that's not a big driving mechanism to the climate and longer range forecasting.
We've had the snow, we've had the cold temperatures. We haven't had a lot of severe weather, have we?
No. It's been, pardon me, remarkably quiet, which to me then raises the concern when we do moderate around here, the lingering cold, that I think it may be a late arriving severe weather season. I know it's been pretty much minimal, even in through the southern states and southeast this year. Again, positioning the jet, the lingering cold, it doesn't take much to get things to pop back temperature and moisture wise. I think while we're kind of fragmenting the jet, trying to split a little bit, I think in the next few weeks, I think we're still in line for our fair share of it. Just might be a little more extended, a later arriving severe weather season.
Mm-hmm. Same thing you're seeing.
Yeah, that's right. And the other thing about severe weather is all it takes is one bad day, and you can change the stats entirely on that.
Yeah, you can make up in a hurry if you drive a couple of squall lines or a squall line out of the plains into the Midwest and come up with a few dozen hail or high wind reports there, you've already made a step in the other direction towards normalcy. So, yeah, Dr. Angel, right on with that.
We're here with Greg Soliere, a meteorologist. We're here with Dr. Jim Angel with the University of Illinois and State Water Survey. Used to be right across the street from us in our old location. Now you're down the street.
That's right, yes.
Where exactly is the water survey?
Yeah, roughly? So we're across the railroad tracks from the old station there at the near the corner of First and Windsor. And so we've got... you actually do the weather observations there, too. So if you're on Windsor Road, if you look that field to the north, you can actually see our weather instruments out there.
356-9397. You can join us on the phones. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line at 351-5357 or email us talk@wdws.com. Max Armstrong joins us in hour number two. If you have any weather-related questions, particularly on Earth, you can get those in here to
Dr. Astronomy?
Angel and Greg Soliere. You can join us. You're not going to find two better weather minds here to answer your questions. So now's your opportunity up to the top of the hour here at 9:43. There's lots of ways to get information, gathering the way technology is today. But do you use sometimes, either one of you, just a rain gauge, get listeners, people that help you gather information?
That's right. We do have, I have a ring gauge at home. We actually have this volunteer network called COCORAHS, which is kind of a funny name, COCORAHS.
Yep.
And it's the community's, our science-based, or I would say citizen science-based effort. So we take volunteers that you can either do online training or we also have some training sessions. And you can put out a gauge in your backyard and make those reports every day. And as I always say, we can't have too many rain gauges because it can vary quite a bit from place to place. I know in particular cases we've had times where it's rained a quarter of an inch at the airport and 2 inches of the water survey and 6 inches down at the Esquire here. So it can it'd be a big difference.
Yeah. And there's, of course, you have your standard National Weather Service observation sites, co-op sites as well, which is sort of like a second order, but still in that official category. So there's a, with the improvement of technologies today, that the reach, the actual observation of weather events is far more substantial than it was, say, 10, 20, 30 years ago.
All right, exactly. Back to the phones here for our weather experts. Hi, Gary. Good morning.
Good morning. I had the privilege of working with Jim for many years, and I have a question about soil temperature the depth of freezing this year seemed to be more problematic than previous years, and I was wondering where we could find data on that topic.
Yes, so the Water Survey does take soil temperature data from around the state. We've got data for here and then about 18 other sites around the state at 4 and 8 inch level. Now, sometimes the problem is that the frost can actually go deeper. The National Weather Service has another site where they measure frost depth. Unfortunately, it's kind of buried in their website, so it's hard to find. But it's at the North Central Regional River Forecast Center up in Minnesota. But they do have soil depths or freezing depths up in that website. I would say just in general, we've probably had some times where we had some very cold soils this year. But we, when it was really cold, we had snow on the ground, so that kind of kept the from getting too terribly cold. And I'd say nothing like what we saw in 2014, where we had very deep frozen soils down to, well, around here about 2 to 3 feet, and up in northern Illinois closer to 4 or 5 feet in some locations. So it varies. It's, I would say right now our soil temperatures are probably in the upper 40s last time I looked yesterday. So we're probably a little behind schedule for this year. But I, you know, we did have certainly had some frozen soils this year.
Those soil temps, they're over bare ground, I believe grassy areas too. Is there an element of that involved?
That's right. Yeah, that's what makes it difficult about soil temperatures, is it very much depends on where you measure it. Over grass, that acts as a little bit like an insulation, so those respond differently than what you get over bare soil. Also depends on how wet the soil is. So wet soils tend to get cool and stay cool longer than dry soils, and so there's lots of things going on with that. I noticed this year we had that big rain in February that the soils on the south side of the house were thawed out. The ones on the north side were frozen, and guess where all the water came in? Actually came in on the north side of the house. So bad news that day.
Yeah. Story involved there. Finkel did radio stations up in the upper Midwest, Minnesota, Wisconsin. So this is, you know, 30, 40 years ago. Not the network of observations that we are able to do in this day and age. So he would contact the, you know, whoever at the radio station, who would then contact the local funeral home and go from there, and they would have a feel of the frost depth. And you know, that's just the way he did it back 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah.
So you can take a qualitative or a quantitative approach to it.
Getting more practical than that.
There you go.
Yes.
Anything else, Gary?
No, I guess I just had one other question. I know for operating the monitoring networks around the state, it takes a lot of cooperation and funding, and I was wondering how the Water Survey is doing in to maintain funding for their various weather-related programs.
Ah, yes. Yeah. So it's always an issue, especially rough time the last 2 years when we didn't have a budget. And so there was a lot of pressure there. So we're always looking for alternate sources of funding, either through research or donations. So if you want to go that route, we certainly accept any kind of help on that financially to help us out, because some of these networks are not cheap. That's the problem. The volunteer network is pretty low cost, but the higher tech stuff with the soil temperature and soil moisture probes, that can add up to a lot of money.
Okay.
I think that the information, you know, you provide and the expertise that you gentlemen both provide is so valuable for so many reasons. I think people don't realize, you know, that we need to maintain funding for these networks, or we'll be missing a lot of that valuable information. So thank you both.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Gary. 356-9397 is the phone number, and we'll come back with more with our guests after this timeout. Welcome back. Penny for your thoughts on a Friday. Having some fun here. We're talking weather in this first hour. Max Armstrong, farm broadcaster, one of the most recognizable voices in that industry, will be with us in hour number two from a national perspective. And we'll talk with Max here in hour number two. May have Greg and Jim just stick around for a couple of minutes when he's here, since the weather and farming are all kind of connected to each other. Anyway, I got a text in from Eric. He says, I noticed Moore, Oklahoma, and I've lived down there, so I know this area, has been leveled more than once by tornadoes. How is it one particular place is so frequently impacted?
Just it's the perfect setup, potentially for a perfect storm. Cool, dry air in off the ranges of the Rockies, Gulf moisture, heating, warmth, just a good mid-latitude location. And those two air masses, basically, and change of pressure and wind up aloft, the center, the epicenter, kind of Tornado Alley, the old traditional one, the way I remember it. I know it was extended during several years ago when we had severe weather into the southeast, but up through Missouri, Oklahoma, eastern Kansas, parts of eastern Nebraska, the Midwest. So it's just the perfect spot, mid-latitude for your range of temperature and humidity and wind, and off you go to the races when those right elements are all put together.
Yeah, our tornadoes are severe enough. I mean, with Gifford can tell you all about that, all the things that have happened in our state. But you haven't seen tornadic activity and all the weather-related stuff that goes with it.
They do them big time.
In Oklahoma, it is a full-time, high-paying
business.
That's right. Well, around the clock, local coverage. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. That's the spot. That's the place, and I'm sure climatology would back it up.
Yep. You know, yep, it's very much so.
That's for sure. We mentioned gathering the information. Willard Airport, we see a lot on the forecast and so forth. Are airports good places to get information because they're out in the open, or are they maybe supplemental to what you normally use? I mean,
yeah, they're pretty good. They take observations that we don't get elsewhere, like things on visibility and cloud heights and stuff like that are all aviation-based. They're probably a little weaker on things like precipitation.
Yes.
The amounts I would take in with a grain of salt, but whether it's present or not, and they're pretty good at that. But and the temperatures are okay. But they're kind of different focus. So, but yeah, it's a good information, and we get that at pretty high time resolution too in real time. So, it is good stuff.
Those sites were probably the first to be established because they had to be manned, obviously 24/7, which in some cases and in many cases that's not the case anymore. And so that made the best choice. Aviation issues and around the clock and observations and observation type people that would be there to take that information on in. So the old first order stations, I believe they used to call them.
Yeah, that's right.
It seems windier at airports. Is that true? I mean,
because they're open obviously space. Open space, so they always want to be in an open area. So yeah, that makes it pretty breezy out there.
Yeah, that and gas stations.
Yeah,
I think are the windiest places around. Let's see here, 356-9397 is the phone number. Got another caller coming in here. We're at 9:55. Max Armstrong is in the building, and he's going to join us here just after the news at 10. And Jim is up next. We have Jim with Jim Angel and Greg Solier. Hi.
Good morning, gentlemen. So glad to join you on a nice weather morning.
And you're welcome.
Yes. Take credit for it. You guys always get the blame for the bad weather, for sure. What I'm calling about is more just a comment. Just several years ago, I had a court case that I was involved in, and I needed to prove some weather stats, and I wanted to just put out there, and you guys could probably comment on it. I believe it's the Illinois Water Survey keeps stats of, like, I think 10 or 12 or 16 different weather conditions, whether it's foggy, clear, visibility, how far, whether it's raining or dry, et cetera. And those are accepted by the courts as official, and you can get very specific if you call them and say, hey, on the 10th at 10 o'clock at night we had a accident, something's on a ticket here that's incorrect. The courts do accept that they are court certified, so if somebody ever has any issues where they need weather proof, they can always go. And I don't think they even charged for it. I think you just had to give them a time frame, and they printed it out, and it helped us in our court case.
Wow.
That's great. Yeah, we do provide that service. There's actually I'm co-located with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, and they actually do what they call certified data. So they actually, and not just for here, but for around the Midwest, where you get certified copies and say that these are official and so forth. There is a charge for that because there is some labor involved with putting that together. So now it's no longer free, unfortunately, but it is a pretty good bargain because in many cases, like you said, it can make or break a case based that are weather related. Yeah.
The field of forensic meteorology.
That's right. Yes, yeah. There's a whole field of that.
Really,
that
where, there is.
Yeah. You can make a business out of that.
Have you ever been asked to? Have been asked to submit a written statement or something for court?
Yeah, I've done written statements, affidavits, and some testimony. Although it's always kind of strange for actual court testimony, I've never done that because they usually settle out of court before then. So I've never actually been on the stand. But yeah,
interesting. All right, Jim. Anything else?
No, that's it. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate it. We're here with Dr. Jim Angel. We've got Greg Solier here. We've got Max Armstrong coming in. We'll have these guys just hang out for a few minutes at the early part of the
show with Max, because you work with Max on This Week in Agribusiness.
Of course, so, yes.
Show so is in the can, as they say, okay. For yet another week.
You got a preview of it?
4-week forecast week. We're actually going to do that for the next 4 or 5, 6 weeks, an updated 4-weeker just because of the degree of delay that we have out there of late. And Orion checks in as well, and he is sounding mighty fine, so we'll have that on this week's edition of This Week in Agribusiness.
All right, Rick says, do you as scientists or weathermen believe in global warming and think we should take this seriously? Well, look at the time.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Oh, my goodness.
Well, we could touch on that a little bit at the beginning of the next hour, but we do have the news coming up.
Thank goodness.
At 10 o'clock. You've heard Saved by the Bell. Saved by the news tone.
Thank
here.
You, Mr. Kaiser.
10 o'clock. All right, we'll have the CBS news coming up at the top of the hour. Max Armstrong will jump in with us here in hour number two. So I got a chance to talk with one of the great broadcasters in ag, of course, Max Armstrong. Next on WDWS, Champaign-Urbana.
It's the second hour of A Penny for Your Thoughts with Brian Barnhart on News Talk 1400 WDWS. You can reach out to us on the phone at 217-356-9397, email talk@wdws.com, or text on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line 217-351-5357. Now, here's Brian Barnhart.
All right, we're at 10 after 10, 46 degrees here in downtown Champaign. We're on Penny for Your Thoughts this morning. We've had a great morning so far with our guest, Dr. Jim Angel from the State Water Survey, and, of course, our meteorologist, Greg Solier. Been talking a lot about weather-related questions. And we're joined this hour. Our studio is officially full. We're at capacity here because Max Armstrong has made it in. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, sir. Are you suggesting that when I come into the room, there's so much girth that it fills the room? Is that what you're saying, Brian? I got that message. Yes, thank you.
I'm talking appreciate about it. The number of chairs more so. Yes, but no.
It's great to see you.
Great to see you, and I just admire your work so much.
I'm a huge fan of yours. Now, I don't know if there's anybody from Purdue listening. I am a lifetime member of the Purdue alumni. I fear they may revoke my membership, but the truth is, if I have a choice, when listening to a Boilermaker Fighting Illini game, I'll go with your play-by-play. Oh, wow. I'm serious about that. Wow. I really, really enjoy the way you lay it out there.
Well,
it's easy to follow. You're not a homer. I mean, you support the team, obviously, yeah, but it's a good, balanced play-by-play, and as a fan, I enjoy that.
Well, thank you. You're very kind to say that, and you brought me a book. I appreciate that.
You know,
Stories from the Heartland.
That's my good bathroom book, I call it. You know, it's a nice size, fits right on the tank. It's got a lot of pictures and short stories, and, you know, you can consult it from time to time when you go in the reading room.
Now, you know these two gentlemen in the room, at least. I don't know if you've met Jim Angel before?
Just this morning. I've followed his work over many years, but it's and of course, I know...
Yeah, you know, Solier.
Yeah, you can't get rid of me, can you?
They're everywhere.
356-9397 is the phone number if you've got a question for these guys here. We're going to have Greg and Jim stay with us for a couple of minutes here at the beginning. We've got a couple of leftover questions. And real quick, a question about global warming, which we always get on the anytime we have the weather guys in. Just your thoughts from I think that was Rick that sent that in. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I get asked about climate change a lot. And when we look at the numbers for Illinois, I mean, you know, everybody asks if I believe it, but actually what we really do is look at the numbers and look at what we're seeing. And right now in Illinois, in the Midwest, we're seeing that we're having, believe it or not, milder winters and wetter springs. That seems to be the pattern that we've been seeing for the last several years. And not only wetter conditions, but more heavy rain events. So a lot more to 2, 4, and 6 inch rainfalls, which are very problematic because those are the ones that cause a lot of flooding in both farm fields and in the cities. And also you get a lot of runoff, and so you get soil erosion and nutrient loss and all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of problems associated with that. And moving forward, we're very concerned because they have big impacts, not only here but elsewhere. And I would say right now, probably, we're seeing out west a lot of heat waves, a lot of droughts, and big problems out there. Illinois probably has not taken the brunt of the kind of changes we've seen in other parts of the country.
Mm-hmm. And a text in from Tracy says, what is the guy's prediction for the summer? Wet and cooler will be hot and dry. And we touched on that a little bit, but you just gave, what do you say, your
4-month forecast?
Well, basically thinking that we are going to transition into a little more seasonal warm, seasonal heat, this window of opportunity as we continue to play out here in the next couple of weeks, kind of broadening its base during the course of May. And I think into June, we ought to be in relatively good order here. Typical distribution of rainfall and average temperatures. I am probably a little outlier on a couple of other guys of maybe some concern over dryness, maybe even some teleconnection of that drought that's still playing out in the southern plains to once again reestablish itself northeastward into Missouri and perhaps this far into the central, maybe southwest and southern Corn Belt locales. I know it's quite a world of difference from what we have out there right now, but would anticipate that. Meanwhile, I think there may be some just ongoing too much wet, too much cold initially through the Dakotas, the upper Midwest, and maybe some of that then works its way through the Great Lakes areas of Wisconsin and Michigan and Lower Lakes region later on into the summer season. So kind of on board with maybe a little warmer to hotter and drier scenario as we get deeper into summertime here across our part of the Corn Belt.
He's pretty good, Max.
You know, timing is everything. And truly, in terms of the crops, timing is so crucial. I mean, if we start off this season with this good moisture foundation that we have, you know, we can get into some dry days and maybe get by reasonably well. The problem is with too much moisture in the spring, you may not have the root system established. You know, we've run into that some years. You don't get enough root system, and then you hit the dryness, and then you can have some challenges in yields. Yeah. But, you know, the last couple of years have made us wonder if we can handle anything in these fields, because we've, you know, we watched weekly crop bulletins every Monday afternoon, and they would tell us of problems in the fields, and lo and behold, the yields come in better than expected. So it begs the question if anybody's going to pay a lot of attention to those crop condition ratings as the summer goes on. And I know the answer to the question. Yes, we will.
356-9397. Max Armstrong has joined us here, one of the most recognizable voices in ag broadcasting and broadcasting, ag business broadcasting. You and Greg do the show, Agribusiness, This Week in Agribusiness, right? You just taped it yesterday?
Yeah, This Week in Agribusiness, yeah, so. And we're privileged to be on locally here, and we appreciate that so much on the local television stations, and then we're on the RFD-TV channel, which is all across the country. You know, we have a retired judge who follows Greg's forecast every weekend in downtown Denver.
Yes.
We hear from Mary.
Yes, that's right. Make specific mention of that drought as best you can. Yes, we know it's there.
Tell him not to stand in front of Colorado.
That's right. Move that big body out of the way, please. I think same complaints out of New York State, too, from what I remember.
Of course, everybody associates a lot with you, with Orion. Yeah. Samuelson. How's he doing, by the way?
He's doing much better. He had kind of a tough winter because of severe back pain. He's expecting to be back on the air with me the beginning of May, but he and I have hung out together over 40 years now, and we've been partners that long, and he continues to be very knowledgeable, very wired into what's happening in agriculture, and certainly staying abreast of the political scene these days, which we'll watch closely all this year because of the writing of a new farm bill.
Yep, you've got that.
He sounded great as well with a call-in interview when we put the show together. He sounded real strong.
Yeah, and you follow Dr. Angel's information all
I
the
have,
time, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, over the years.
Great.
And,
great
to have you guys together for a few minutes anyway.
I like that.
I appreciate it so much.
Yeah. Same here.
All right, we'll let these guys go. I know they've got other things to do along the way. Greg, I think you'll be here during the day.
Absolutely. Yeah. Back in for the news hour this afternoon with Scott Beatty, and a pleasure as usual. Brian.
All right, we'll talk to Max some more here after the break here, after this timeout at 10:17. We're on Penny for Your Thoughts, News Talk 1400 DWS here, as we're on a Friday visiting with farm broadcaster Max Armstrong, well-known in this country. A lot of great work at WGN for, what, 3 decades plus up there at WGN, is that right?
Yeah, I think it was about 3 decades, 31 years full-time there.
Yeah, and you are based now, what, in North Carolina?
Yeah, I fly back and forth every week. We do our television show. Orion and I do our show west of Chicago in Batavia. Mm-hmm. And we've worked with the same crew, one guy 30 years, another one 25 years, and they serve us well. So, yeah, Southwest Airlines makes it possible for me. I'm with them a couple of times a week, and they just do it right. There are 3 nonstops each way, each day.
And but this is one of your favorite areas to come to, right? I mean,
honestly,
you're from Indiana, but this part of the world.
I just really have so many great friends in this region, and I always stop through here somewhere when I'm traveling, either on 74 or 57, down 130, Highway 1, 49, 47.
Yep. And you're even friends with Gentry. So that's, you know.
Well, You have any calls waiting there, Brian? Anybody need to talk about anything else? Yes, I've known Mr. Dave a long time. Of course, he is a fellow member of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting.
Yes, he is. Does a great job for us and has for many years.
He does. And I was the president of the NAFB last year.
Is that right?
They finally really got desperate. I've been a member for 41 years.
We're at 356-9397. Max Armstrong is in studio with us. What a privilege to have him here with us today. So if you have any questions for him, feel free to jump in at any point. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 3515-357, or email us at talk@wdws.com. Want to remind you to mark your calendar for Wednesday, May 9th, the economic seminar that Busey holds every year. They've been fulfilling dreams since 1868. It'll be at the I Hotel and Conference Center in Champaign. The doors open at 3:30, presentation at 4:15. Now, usually these have been in the mornings, but this is going to be at night at the I Hotel. Ed Charlo, the vice chairman of Busey Bank, will provide interesting news and information on the state of the local and national economy. Guest speaker is Sue Gray, the president and CEO of United Way of Champaign County, and the event will recognize Ed Charlo's more than five decades of commitment and service to Busey and Champaign County. If you're unable to attend the seminar, connect with Ad Busey on Twitter for live updates. It'll also be available on Busey's YouTube channel following the event. Look for the rebroadcast on Urbana Public Television. So it's the Champaign County Economic Seminar, Wednesday, May 9th, at the I Hotel and Conference Center. Call 1-800-67-BUSEY for details on that. All right, a text from, let's see here, from Jerry. Says, Uncle Versi and Aunt Pet still enjoy listening to Max. You know who that is?
Yes, yes. Uncle Versi and Aunt Pet were characters of Jerry Clower, the country comedian who started out in Yazoo City, Mississippi. He began his career as a fertilizer salesman. Mm. And he would go around all of these farm meetings and tell these stories about these two, well, this family of characters. And he really built, I think he's in the Country Music Hall of Fame. And he, you know, he's been gone probably 15 years or so. But Jerry Clower had those two characters, so yeah.
Mm. You travel around to all kinds of agriculture shows. I'm sure you met part of this, the fun for you, the enjoyment for you, is meeting all these people and characters all over the country.
I can't say enough about it, Brian, but the neatest part about it, and I don't, I guess I've become a little bit hardened, a little crusty about all this over the years. I don't get excited meeting politicians.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't really turn me on. I love being on farmsteads. Mm-hmm. And truly, since I left WGN, which has been about 8 years ago, the opportunity to be out on farms has been greater than ever for me. And to be invited into the kitchen, to sit out in the machine shed on a rainy afternoon, to be in the combine cab. I'm going to level with you. I hear stuff in the combine cab that I would never, ever. People tell me stuff that I would never hear otherwise when you're in that cab at harvest time. And I think part of it is the enjoyment that a farmer has at harvest. They really, truly enjoy bringing in that crop, you know, bringing in the fruits of the bounty. But, you know, they will tell you stuff. Sometimes you say, wait a minute, I don't think I need to hear this.
What's some of the great stories you've heard? I mean, stories that stick out for you, and you've written books, Stories from the Heartland. But,
goodness, where do I start? Yeah. In the book, there's a little article about Clayton Yeider, and many people won't remember who Clayton Yeider was.
The Ag Secretary.
He was.
Right?
Yeah. He was the Agriculture Secretary, but before that, he was Trade Representative of the United States. Clayton was the guy who pried open the door to our meat shipments into Japan. They were very protective back in the day, and we shipped almost nothing in the way of beef and pork into Japan. He was a skilled negotiator. He had such a different approach to negotiating trade than the White House does now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not saying that either style was bad. I mean, maybe both styles are right for the time. You know what I mean? But Clayton was he ran the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. That's for where I first met him, and then he became a trade negotiator. But I was walking out of my hotel room in Japan one morning. We were on a trade mission over there, and I heard this booming voice, and Clayton Yeider had been in the room next to mine all night long. I said, Max, what are you doing here?
Yeah. Is what's going on with trade and the issues there and regarding the tariffs, is that what's number one on agriculture's mind these days?
It's high on the list. Yeah, we're concerned about it. When you ship so much into the export markets, you take a look at the hog industry, for example. 1/4 of the pork that we produced in the United States is sold to other countries. About 15% of the beef that we produce in America has to be sold outside of the United States. You know, 95% of the world's population is over there. Mm-hmm. I mean, up there in Canada, down there in Mexico, or in some other foreign country, and we have to have them for what we produce here.
And China's probably the biggest for certain grains.
By all means. For soybeans, you bet.
Yeah.
They are the by far the number one export market of ours for soybeans. We have very significant competition there, obviously, from Brazil and Argentina most years. Argentina has a short crop this year because of drought down there. Mm-hmm. But I guess I feel that we'll eventually sell our bean crop. You know, there's only so much in terms of soybean production, soybean supplies available to the world, and the Chinese demand just continues to climb.
And it seems to me that both sides in this, China and the U.S. and all the back and forth, they've taken the low-hanging fruit, like steel, aluminum. Okay, we'll tariff that. Okay, we'll counter with soybeans or pork or whatever. I mean, there's some negotiating going on, I guess, within all of that.
Well, the interesting thing is when you talk about pork shipments, the biggest pork producer in the United States is owned by China. Smithfield Foods.
Is that right?
So it kind of clouds the picture a little bit. How far are they really willing to go? Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that makes this different than trade negotiations in the past is that it's so public. Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody paid attention, really, 30 years ago when agreements were being negotiated because it was like, as Orion used the expression, it was like watching paint dry. It was such a painful process, slow, plodding day after day after day. This is being played out in the media hour to hour, Brian.
Yeah, that's for sure. 356-9397. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. You can email us talk@wdws.com. We just had the passing of Mrs. Bush, former First Lady. Now, do you have a chance to introduce or be around her husband at one time?
Yeah, George H.W.? It was in 1988. I was asked to moderate a program in Washington at the J.W. Marriott Hotel, and it was President Bush. Running against him was Michael Dukakis, and running against him also was Jesse Jackson. So the three had been invited to come in to this agriculture seminar, and I remember putting my hand on Reverend Jackson's back, and I thought, man, this guy's been pumping iron. And he was always, pretty substantial guy, but he had a bulletproof vest on at the time. During that campaign, I think there had been a threat on Reverend Jackson's life, but it was it was an interesting experience. We had 21 television cameras lined up. I guess they didn't know pool coverage back in the days, but there were 21 TV cameras in the room.
So just moderated the debate, basically?
Yeah, they came in one by one.
Oh, one by one, okay.
But the thing I remember about Bush 41 is when you talk to him, he looked at you and he listened. His eyes weren't darting around the room. He wasn't looking to see who else was there. He truly listened, and it didn't matter who was talking to him. He looked in their eyes and listened to what they were saying, which to me was a hallmark of a great communicator, because that's half the communication process, is being a good listener.
That's for sure. We mentioned all the work you've done, WGN. When did you start working there?
It was 1977. Yeah, I'd been with the Illinois Farm Bureau out of Purdue. I went to work with the Illinois Farm Bureau for 2.5 years. The remarkable thing about that is I was hired by two U of I guys. I think Earl Butz's brother and I were the only two Purdue guys in the house over there at Bloomington at Farm Bureau in those days. So I had been in Illinois 6 weeks, and we were over at the Peoria Stockyards, and there was a big U of I supporter there who had a commission firm. Many people will remember the name Dick Herm. Mm. And I'm sitting in Dick's office, and he said, Max, where did you go to college? I was pretty proud. I said, well, I went to Purdue University. Dick looked aside, looked out the window, and he said, well, I guess it's not a bad place to go if you can't go to college. So I reined it in after that, Brian.
Well, we're friends with, I think the one thing that unites Purdue and Illinois fans is beating Indiana.
Yeah,
right? Isn't that
absolutely
what they try to do?
Yeah, that's right.
So
for sure. No, I'm so crazy about Illinois, too, the University of Illinois, because there are so many friends who are grads here and are students here yet.
Well, when you think about it, the two universities are pretty similar.
They really are.
In what they offer, what they specialize in.
Being great land-grant colleges,
engineering and farming and agriculture.
You're right.
They're very, very similar. All right, we've got Max Armstrong with us. We've got Michael Kaiser with us as well for News Headlines. Come back with more questions for Max Armstrong. Send those our way. We'll continue our discussion. We had Greg Solier and Jim Angel on earlier. We're back after this. Back here with Max Armstrong here on this Friday. We had Greg Solier with us earlier. We had Dr. Jim Angel in the first hour with your weather questions. Any questions, comments you want to make for Max Armstrong, feel free to send those our way. Farmers you talk to around here, I'm sure with the cold weather we've had, have just been kind of in a waiting, holding pattern.
Yeah, it's
right?
frustrating. Yeah. You can see it. You can see it played out of the social media, and as you visit with them on the phone, you know, they're ready to go. And as the calendar advances to this point in April, they want to get some work done. You know, I guess the thing we have to remember is, on average, by the 1st of May, when you look back over the past 6 years, we've only planted one-third of the United States corn crop by the 1st of May. So that means we jam a lot in historically in the beginning of May. You get about, the 10th or 15th, and the respected agronomist at the U of I and other institutions will tell you that the yields start to yield potential starts to fall off when you get, you know, into the middle part of May. So a lot of folks like to get that work done by Mother's Day, especially, Brian.
Yeah.
But there are other factors, as many agronomists will also hasten to say, that the planting date is just one of many factors to determine the ultimate yield of the corn crop. There are other things such as pollination and timing of moisture, et cetera.
Yeah. Are there other parts of the country that have been able to get started more so than the Midwest?
Not really. I mean, that's the interesting thing about it. Now, obviously, in southern Texas, they've been able to, they plant corn, you know, down near the Mexican border. Mm. And they started many weeks ago, just as they ordinarily do. But, you know, where I know a lot of farmers down in eastern North Carolina, where the big production in that state is, they've been frustrated, too, getting into to get their work done on the variety of crops that they grow there.
Saw a report out, I think it was from the USDA, about the overall more soybeans predicted to be planted this year than corn.
That's the expectation. The planting intentions report, when it came out at the end of March, indicated we would shift the acreage some from corn to soybeans. You know, with all of this trade chatter, it'll be interesting to see if farmers have become nervous about that, because China takes two-thirds of the soybeans that we export. You know, will that make them say, I don't know, we're going to find a home for this, and maybe we shouldn't shift so much to beans? But the expectation in that USDA report was that we would plant more soybeans than corn for the first time in 35 years.
Yeah, I think it was 83 maybe like that. Yeah. So Illinois, Iowa, what are the top three in each one of those crops?
Well, in terms of corn, the top three are historically, year after year, you've got Iowa, Illinois, and Nebraska. And then also among the big corn producers, you'll have Minnesota and you'll have Indiana. Ohio's generally in the top 10, as is Missouri. Minnesota certainly is both a major corn and soybean producer. A lot of people don't realize
I was going to say, I don't think about Minnesota. When I think crops, I don't think Minnesota necessarily.
Yeah, it all goes into the southern half of the state. And, you know, they are always in the top five of both crops, generally speaking. And Nebraska, of course, is a big corn producer, but all of that's in the eastern part of the state, and it's irrigated. So they're very dependent upon that Ogallala aquifer. Yeah.
So would Minnesota be the one state when people think here, we just think we grow it all here, but is there another state or another area of the country that you don't think about that are is bigger corn or soybean producer than...
You know, Minnesota would be the one that really stands out.
Okay.
Although we're shifting more and more corn and soybean production into the Dakotas, especially soybeans. Soybeans are now grown as far north as Manitoba in Canada. In fact, I believe they're putting in a brand new soybean processing plant in southern Manitoba, Canada.
Is that right?
To handle the beans.
Right? When can they get in the field up there?
Well, yeah, it's a short maturity bean, of course, that they put in.
Yes, 356-9397. You can join us on the phones. You can text us, Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. How is the family farm doing overall in this day and age?
Well, it's a good question. And the quote, family farm, is a term that is often misconstrued and misunderstood because almost all of the farms in the United States are, in fact, family farms. 98% of the farms are family farms, but they've incorporated, of course, for tax purposes. It may be a mother and father and daughter and son-in-law. It may be a mother, father, son, two brothers, but they've incorporated. And certainly they are producing on larger acreage than we did not many years ago. But the family farm, you know, this we've extended this downturn in the ag economy for four years now, and it's a long, dark tunnel. That's why marketing of the crop is so essential. When you get a little bit of a bump in price, when you see the market for one reason or another spike up, the producer needs to be poised and ready to go to grasp that opportunity.
Yeah, you had some changes. There was the big tax law that was passed. Did a lot of that affect agriculture? Could it down the road?
Various provisions of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of folks who are watching it from the standpoint of the inheritance tax, Brian. You know, the inheritance tax, what we've historically called the death tax over the years, has made it difficult to keep the farm and the family in some instances. Mm-hmm. And we've made great progress on the inheritance tax. And there was some additional effort that went into that. You know, the big piece of legislation we're watching now is the farm bill.
Right.
And we'll see mm-hmm. what happens to that in the weeks and months.
Yeah. So where are they? Because they have to renew it. It expires. Does it expire
this fall?
This fall, yeah, September 30th.
And the one we have now was extended. You know, it was to end in 2012, and we wound up adding two more years to that, the 2014 farm bill. One reason that it's important to get it written this year is you want the farm bill written in bad times.
Really?
You don't want to have good, robust farm income when you're writing a farm bill, and the 2014 bill is a perfect example of that. You know, there were things that shouldn't have been done probably there from the standpoint of writing that bill. You want to have things a little more difficult on the ag economy probably to get a good bill.
Hmm.
Crop insurance needs to be appreciated and maintained. That's the safety net for many of our farmers now.
Hmm.
They pay premiums, but those premiums are subsidized to some extent by the federal government. I think there are 15 or 16 private companies that write the crop insurance, but it's administered by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And just yesterday, they named an Illinois farmer to run that agency at the USDA, Martin Barbary, who farms down near Carmi in southeast Illinois, is going to be running that risk management agency in the Purdue administration at USDA.
Yeah. How sunny Purdue perceived generally by ag folks?
He is liked in the countryside.
Really?
And part of it is he's out there all the time, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, I've covered 14 secretaries of agriculture, and I cannot remember anyone who's been in the country as much as Sonny Perdue. He's been in the RV, you know, going out across the countryside. And somebody might say, well, it's a big publicity stunt. I've been around Sonny Perdue enough to know that he likes being with farmers. Hmm. That's where he prefers to be. He's not comfortable being in the concrete and steel and politics of Washington. Hmm. He was the governor of Georgia for 8 years. He says, well, that was a kind of a sabbatical that I got away from the countryside. But he does like being with farmers, and farmers like him because of that.
Yeah, was he a peanut farmer?
He was not. He was in the grain business. Actually, he's a veterinarian by training. He came out of school and was going to become a veterinarian, and he decided, you know, that's not for me after all. So he's had grain elevators in Georgia for many years.
Of course, the most famous peanut farmer was
Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
Whose ag secretary was Bob Berglund.
That's right.
And Jimmy, of course, was the one who imposed the grain embargo on the Soviet Union back in 1980 that had devastating effects on the United States.
All right. We're here with Max Armstrong today. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more. We're at 10:44. Boy, this is going fast. We'll come back with Max Armstrong after this. All right, we're talking here with Max Armstrong on Penny for Your Thoughts, News Talk 1400 DWS. A reminder that voting continues on the News Talk 1400 DWS, the News Gazette Media's The People's Choice, the best of East Central Illinois. WDWS.com is the place to go and cast your votes in a variety of categories, including food, dining, nightlife, kids, pets, and more. The People's Choice, brought to you in part by Express Employment. And if you are in need of a collision repair, certainly we can help you there. Gallo Miller Paint and Collision Repair, they know that having a car accident is a serious matter. Choosing the best collision repair specialist is also important and serious. And the guys to contact, Dave Miller and Bill Gallo, they're very passionate about their business. That's one of the reasons they put their last name on the business. 18 years in the car repair industry, 23,000 vehicles, and the big thing is they know the collision repair business inside and out. They've worked as insurance adjusters. They've ran body shops. So, you know, your mind's kind of racing when all this happens. You just give them the keys. They take care of it, and they'll keep you posted on what's happening as you get your car back to as good as new. So free estimates always offered. If you've backed into somebody accidentally and maybe not a lot of damage, but some, they'll give you a free estimate. They'll give you a free estimate anytime, but that's a good thing to do. And it's conveniently and centrally located in Champaign-Urbana, south side of I-74 between Neal Street and Prospect exits. Go to gallomiller.com. We're here with Max Armstrong. If you have any questions, 356-9397. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357, or email us talk at DWS.com. A lot of talk, of course, budgets in Washington, budget in Springfield in Illinois. That trickles down and affects ag, right?
It does. And I worry a little bit about the future because of these fiscal challenges in Illinois and at the national level. Agriculture research, unfortunately, tends to be an afterthought. When they're writing a farm bill in Washington, you know, there's a big constituency, obviously, for the farm programs. There's a huge constituency for the SNAP program. That's the old food stamp program, and that's 80% of the budget. The SNAP program, school lunch program, that is 80% of what we consider to be farm spending. They tied the two together probably 40 years ago to make sure that you could get a farm bill passed. Now it's become a bit of a sticky issue because some of the Republicans want to tie work, you know, employment, the effort to go out and get a job to those kinds of benefits. And Democrats are fighting that, and it may make it a very tall challenge to pass a farm bill this year in a timely manner.
Yeah, and it's too bad it affects research in the ag world because we've got a great university right here at our doorstep.
Oh, my goodness. Everybody should be a lobbyist in terms of agriculture research. When you think back of all of the advances that have come out of the halls of the University of Illinois, the labs, the fields here, Purdue, University of Wisconsin, and some people will say, well, you've got the likes of Monsanto, you've got all of the big corporations. Now Bayer is buying Monsanto. You know, we're getting a smaller field there of players. And true, they are continuing to do their research, but they build on those basic building blocks of research that have come out of our great universities. And if we don't have those monies available, I worry about the advances that we need to continue to feed a growing population that grows by 10,000 an hour in this world, 10,000 every hour added to the population of the world.
We talked about family farms a little bit. Are young people in big enough numbers getting into farming? Are they carrying on, or are a lot of young people saying...
It's a great question, tremendous question, Brian, because when we had the robust prices before this downturn of the ag economy, yes, indeed, many young people were coming back. They were saying, all right, hey, there's a future here. There's an opportunity to return from the university and come back and work with mom and dad. I fear that this has had a chilling effect. This ag recession that we have had has had a chilling effect on the interest of young people coming back to the farm. However, mom and dad are still trying to help wherever they can, and that's what's helping prop up the market for farmland. It's farmers buying that land, and in many instances, they're trying to make sure that the next generation behind them will have a chance to farm.
All right, let's go to Mark. Hey, Mark, you're on with Max Armstrong. Go ahead.
Hey, Max. Hey, you know, I'm going to be redundant, but you have one of the most iconic voices of our time. I'm telling you. It is just something else. It grabs your attention. Well, Brian, you're on your way.
Well, thank you.
That's very kind of you, Mark. I think I'm sounding more like my father every day, but that's kind of, I guess that's what's between the ears. I've always been a little bit raspy, I think, Mark.
At least you actually know where it comes from. You know?
Yeah.
Family roots and all. Hey, I got a couple questions for you. When you're sitting in the camp with those farmers, do they ever talk about the weather modification and the fact that things are changing? They're the ones out there driving around looking up in the sky and seeing all those crisscrossing, what they want to tell you are just vapor trails from airplanes, but it's actually part of a weather modification program. Do they ever talk about that?
No, I think they're very focused on the climate, but you know, for many growers, I think it's the here and now and the next 4 weeks and 6 weeks. You know, they're not as bad as corporate America thinking quarter to quarter, but they're focused very much on that next crop and getting it marketed and getting it grown successfully and utilizing the tools that will help ameliorate to some extent any weather challenges. And we're
so
doing
do
that.
Yeah. Do they talk about the negative aspects of GMOs and Monsanto and what they're planning and the end product, how it varies so much from what it was before it was genetically modified nutritionally wise?
Well, that's very much a matter of debate. I mean, you know, GMOs, they certainly are very much needed to feed a growing population. We take those tools. We take the tools of technology away from farmers. You will handcuff them and their productivity. If you want non-GMO food, you can read the label and you can go ahead and consume it, because there are companies that are more than happy to produce those crops and farmers who can capture value from it. But we need the production from all farms, Mark.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand the business end of it. I get that. But I think there's a trade-off going on, and I just wasn't aware if they were aware of it.
Okay.
Hey, appreciate it all.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your call.
Yeah.
You know, there's an interesting thing. We don't believe scientists anymore. We don't have faith in science, Brian, and that's a little bit troubling. You know, the surveys show that when we talk to members of the public and say, you know, do you put faith in scientists or who do you believe? And unfortunately, scientists aren't trusted. And that's a real problem going forward for us, because we have to build on these building blocks of science to make the advances to produce what we need.
We're going to take another break. We're at 10:54. Max Armstrong with us back after this. All right, a few minutes left here with Max Armstrong. You want your website where people can go?
Yeah, that book you were talking about, mm-hmm. Stories from the Heartland, if they're interested in one of those. Like I said, it's a quick read. Doesn't take long. It's MaxArmstrongBook.com.
MaxArmstrongBook.com.
Yep. It's much thinner than Orion's book. That's for sure.
Let's go back to the phones. Greg in Monticello. Hi, Greg.
Hello.
Hey,
Max,
how are you?
I have a question. I'm good. I saw a TV commercial the other day about Purdue chicken, and they advertise that it's all non-GMO. Is there enough non-GMO corn produced to feed all of Purdue's chickens?
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't know if you could run the math on that. They're a big consumer, but for that niche of their production, I suppose they could source enough of it, and certainly if they pay a premium to the producers to get it. When you think of all of the chicken they crank out, that would be rather right. substantial.
Yeah. I was wondering, are you wearing your business attire today, or are you in bib overall?
I'm not in bibs, but they're never far from me. I've got a pair in the car, as a matter of fact, in my Illinois car. I always carry some around. I had a friend text me a while ago wondering if I had put on any Illini orange and blue today. I have not, which is kind of unusual.
He looks more like the Spartans today.
Yeah,
he's green.
I watch the RFD TV, and Roger Welsh, who used to be on CBS Sunday Morning, did that series Postcards from Nebraska.
Right.
And they're showing those again on RFD TV, and they had one where he was talking about, he wears bib overalls all the time, and he said, you can tell how important something is to a person that wears bib overalls by how many buttons on the side they've got buttoned. If they're just lounging around, they have two buttons undone. If they're going uptown, they button one. If they're going to the bank to talk to the banker, they button both of them up. I thought that was funny.
I'm so paranoid these days, I button them all.
Yeah.
Thanks, Greg.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Max, you've driven a lot of track. We got a minute or so left here, but tractors, parades,
I
love tractors.
I enjoy the old farm tractors. I still have Dad's Super H. Yeah. It's maintained here by the I&I group in the northeast part of the county. And the 560, the Chapter 10 Restored, that was Dad's tractor, too. That's here in Champaign County. Then I have a Super M up in the northern part of the state. And, I guess the thing about it for me, it reminds me of the advances we made in the technology of our equipment. And we should never forget that.
That's right. Those old clutches.
Okay. That's right. Yeah, one of many things we can say.
Yeah, I pulled into a lot of grain elevators with those years ago. So it can be tricky.
I've popped a few clutches in my day, yes.
Hey, Max, it's been a pleasure to have you in here. Thank you.
An honor for me, Brian.
Well, thank you.
Sincerely, I appreciate the time to join you here and your great listeners.
Well, we do great work on radio and television, and I know you and Orion, you were so many years together, but you've got your own brand, too, out there. So.
Well, it's fun to do what we do, and we get to work with some of the nicest people in the world.
We do. Max Armstrong with us. Thank you, Max.
Thank you, Brian.
Good to see you. All right, that's Max Armstrong. Been with us. Thanks to Greg Solier as well for being with us today, and Dr. Jim Angel from the Water Survey. Thanks for all your questions and inputs. More coming up on Monday on Penny for Your Thoughts. Doug Quick will join us from TV, of course, Pictures from the Prairie, and more guests as well, and your phone calls and emails and texts next week. Have a great weekend, everybody. WDWS, Champaign-Urbana.